January 11th, 2006, and this is an oral history interview that's taking place between myself and Donald McNeese. Could you tell me what your full name is?
Donald Raymond McGee, birth date June
2nd, 1945. So, where were you born?
Enterprise, Oregon.
Okay. What first brought you to Union County? When we're just getting a brief history description here, but what
okay, well, I was in the Navy at Lakehurst, New Jersey, and one of my friends took the postal test because we had opportunities for training for transition back into civilian life. So I decided to go into Philadelphia for a few days to take the postal test. And I missed three answers, so I got a 97. They give me a couple points for being military, so it gave me, well, actually, they give me five, so I give me a 102 score, and they sent that to Portland, Oregon, because that was the nearest place they could send it in Oregon. And I've been home about three or four months, and I got a call one day, and he said that we'd like to interview you for a job, postal job at La Grande, Oregon. And I wasn't working yet, so I jumped right on it and came to La Grande for an interview.
Did they hire you at that time then?
Yes.
And did you work in La Grande at that time in the beginning?
Yes, I started in La Grande in January of 1971.
What did you do first for the post office?
I was hired as a clerk carrier, which means I did clerk work and I carried mail both. Carried some around town, relieved some of the motor routes and did some foot route quite a bit. And I leaned towards clerk, so I started working the counter at the post office.
Here in town?
Yeah. Learned to sort mail, what you have to learn. Frankly, every route in the post office and what addresses that route covers. So start sorting mail and eventually working into a full-time window clerk job.
Now, where was the post office then? Was it in the same location as
that now? Same location it is now.
Okay. Now, I know it's quite automated these days, so tell me about sorting mail when you first got started. How did that, kind of an overview of how that started?
Okay, when I started, we had the old sorting cases with the pigeonholes. And you sorted it actually by hand by route. After I retired here in La Grande, they now have what they call carrier route pre-sorted mail. They have a machine where they put the mail in and run it through it and actually sorts it by delivery order by route.
So is that essentially an automated version of pigeonholing it? Only a machine takes care of it.
That's really what it is.
Okay. Now, what would be a route when we're talking about a route?
A route's an area of town that one carrier delivers to, and the town's divided up. I believe it's in seven routes for the city, and then when I retired, there were five rurals. I don't know if there still is.
Yeah. So. Then did that mean if there were seven routes, there were seven carriers for that? Did they each have their own carrier?
Seven carriers and then so many part-time to relieve for days off, sick calls, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And how does the mail work in terms of, we know we put a stamp on the letter and stick it in the mailbox, but what happens to it from there locally here?
What they do now is they put it in a bin, and that whole bin is shipped to Pendleton. Pendleton has automated equipment where they run it through the automated equipment and sorts it into, routes it according to where it's going to go. Some of it's going to go to Portland, going to go by air. Some is going to be sorted out to be delivered to other areas. So it kind of categorizes it to how it needs to be handled. So it's all done by automated machinery.
Now, was it, when you began in the 70s, was that the way that they did the mail then?
No. We had sorting case was pigeonholed. We actually sorted it by major cities, and then there were certain groups of zip codes where you'd sort anything onto that group. So we actually did a pre-sort on it. Then as it processed through the system, it would get a finer sort until it got to where it was going.
So, but now with the new automated business, that means that, does that mean that all mail in the 978 or zip code ends up in Pendleton first, even if it originates in LeGrand and is going back to LeGrand?
Absolutely. Everything is goes to central location, is handled by an automated machine, and then shipped back out to where it's going to be delivered to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, mostly. Now there is local slots in LeGrand where they do keep most of the letter mail for LeGrand.
Is that just a visual look to determine that, to decide whether it goes on? Is there still must be some hand sorting then that takes place?
Some, but very little.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how long, now let's see, we've talked about sorting. You said that you were a clerk and a letter carrier. So let's talk about carrying letters as it occurred in the original when you were first hired in the 70s. What was that job about? How did you carry that out as a letter carrier?
You sorted your mail into a case, your letter mail, your flat mail into a case, and then you bundled it in groups. So like you'd start your route and you'd have a bundle that covered your certain amount of the first of your route. Then you'd switch bundles to the next part of your route and so forth. You wanted a bundle that was comfortable to hold on to, but not too big that you couldn't handle it. So that's how you kind of sorted it, by how much mail you got per section of your route.
So given that general scheme of organization, could it be possible that some people might carry more or less than others?
It was pretty much standard.
I see.
Because most people can handle, you know, a fairly decent bundle.
Mm-hmm.
And then but you'd have your, we use bags on most of the routes. So you'd put your flat mail in and you'd tie any small parcels to it, and then you'd have your bundles of letters.
And as a letter carrier, did you work from a truck then, a vehicle that you drove?
I did both. I did some foot routes where you deliver what you had when you left the post office, and then you'd get to a certain location, there'd be a box with the, that you could open up and get your next part of the route.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody would drop those relays off for you, and then you'd pick those up and do your route that way.
That's if you were a foot carrier.
Foot carrier.
Uh-huh.
If you're motorized, everything's in your vehicle.
Do they still use foot carriers in LeGrand when you left?
They have some part of downtown, I believe, that they still deal with one of the push carts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. Everything else is motorized.
And did you have to, like, take particular, say, some of it was motorized, so were you required to have a government driver's license to operate those vehicles?
Yes.
Take special training?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be really difficult because you're driving on the opposite side of the car like a European.
Right.
But once you do it and realize that all your deliveries are on the right side, it becomes pretty natural pretty fast.
Did you take a course in that? Were you taught locally?
No, pretty much. They just went for a little ride with me and said, okay, you can do it. And
uh-huh.
Then filled me out a license and turned me loose.
Now, is it that way today, or when you left?
When I left, there still wasn't a course local, but they did send them to Portland for, it was a week or 2 weeks of training where they actually get specialized vehicle training along with the proper methods to do your, to deliver mail and to handle mail. So when you got them back, they were, other than learning the route, were pretty much ready to go.
How did the person get trained? How were you trained, in fact, in the beginning? as opposed to how they do it now to do the things that you did?
Well, they just put me with somebody for a day or two to kind of get the feel of it, and I was on my own.
Is that how they do it today?
No. Today they actually send them for specialized training for 1 to 2 weeks.
Then, what was the test about that you took on the post-conference?
The test that I took was pretty much geared towards memorization. I can't remember for sure, but part of it was like they'd give you two lists of addresses, you know, like one, and give you two addresses, and then you had to say whether they were like or different. You had a certain amount of time to go through the list. Another part of it was they put a group of addresses in a box. Well, actually it was like four boxes, I believe, groups of addresses in each. Then they give you a amount of time to study it, then they took it away from you. And then they give you a list of addresses, and you had to put whether in a box A, B, C, or D.
So,
and then there was one other part, but I don't even remember what it was about.
Okay, so we could say that the main theme of the test was your ability to organize and classify, or
to learn addresses and be able to catch differences in numbers, because when you're sorting now, so often you'll have similar addresses or same numbers with different names, that kind of thing. So you need to be able to do it in a fairly quick amount of time, so you don't have a lot of all day to get your mail ready to go, so you need to be able to relate your addresses pretty fast.
When you did the letter carrier thing, did you have a route of your own, or were you doing fill-in?
I don't recall that I ever really had a route of my own. I subbed on foot route quite a bit, and seems like the person that was on it was sick quite a bit, so I did it a lot, but I never did ever have a route of my own.
How about these rural routes that you talked about? Are those done differently? Are those by contract?
Those are, most of them are not contract. They are actually rural carriers, and they deliver from the right side, same as a postal vehicle, but they have to have their own vehicles. And some of them buy a right-hand drive. Some of them have, you know, pedals, retrofitted where they have pedals on both sides. You can steer with this hand, but it's nice to have your brake and your gas over here on the same side that you're sitting on.
Kind of like the pedal systems they use for teaching people to drive?
Basically, yeah. Uh-huh.
I see. Did you ever work any of the rural routes?
No, I didn't. There was a time or two when I lived in the Columbia Gorge that I had a carrier and didn't finish his route, and I'd go out in my own vehicle and finish it, but it was just little, generally just little parts that, that just need to be finished up or something.
Okay. Kind of give us an overview of what is a day in the life for a postal carrier at the time that you got started. What would their day be like? How would it kind of break down and work out?
Well, you come in see if there's anything you need to clean up from the day before, and then you start pulling your mail. If it's not, sometimes it's already on your carrier case. They have a table, you know, with your case, with your route on it, and they a lot of times they'll bring your mail over and just put it on your case ledge, and then they pile your flats up so you could just come over and start casing mail. And that generally would take, I would guess, about 3 hours of your day, maybe a titch bit more, to case your mail, strap it out, load it in your vehicle, and be ready to go out on the route.
Now, is it done that way today?
No.
Okay.
Today, They have a machine that actually sorts it to your route and then sorts it in delivery order, your letter mail only. So when you get your letters, they're already trayed in the deliver in the order they're going to be delivered. So you don't have to do anything with your letters. They're all ready to go. Case up your flats, take care of your packages, and get them in delivery order, and you're ready to go.
Go to your truck and go.
So basically, less office time and more delivery time. So it doesn't take as many carriers to cover the town.
Then, before we move on to the next part, what time would somebody start?
Depends on when your mail is scheduled to arrive, and I don't know what their schedule is nowadays. I think most of our carriers started around 7-ish.
Would that be the time you started in the old days, or in the prior?
Yeah, pretty much. You can't have your carriers coming in before you have a certain amount of the mail sorted, so that they do not run out of work. You got to keep them.
Right.
Keep the mail there for them to case.
Okay, so we've gotten to the point now, then and now, where we've got a case and in the truck. So then what happens?
And then they proceed to the first delivery of the route and start delivering mail. The preferred method is what they call a park and loop, where they drive to a certain location, they put that. They have a loop set up that they're going to deliver, or a section of the route, you know, could be like a 2-block area or whatever. Put the mail in, bring the bag, get out, deliver that area, come back to their vehicle, and then they move to the next spot on the route. Deliver that little section. And then they go move on to the next section. They just park and loop the whole route.
Park and loop.
Yeah.
Okay. Then what?
When they're done with the route, they come back in. They sort out their mail, the outgoing mail that they pick up on the route, and put it where it can be got ready for dispatch.
And that
letters, flats, any parcels.
And that would be the end of their day?
That's pretty much it. Clean up their case, turn in any accountables they may have. They had certified mail, registered mail, express, anything like that they couldn't deliver, then they turn that back in. So it could be there if their customer came in to pick it up.
Here's another question about then and now. I'm familiar, at least from things that I've tried to do, but could the postal carrier sell stamps and things like that? Can they do that? I know they did some of that then, but what about that, and can they do that now?
Some people put their mail, money with their mail, and put it in their mailbox. The preferred method is stamps by mail, where carriers give out little envelopes, and they have printed on one side different items they can purchase. They'll put their money in that, put it in the mailbox, carrier picks it up, next day delivers their stamps back to them. That's the preferred method.
Right. Okay, so we've covered the letter carrier thing. What are some of the hazards of that type of work?
Dogs is the biggest hazard, I would say. Of course, defensive driving, because you're driving on the wrong side of the road, on the wrong side of the car sometimes.
In your experience in this area, was that a major problem? Did we have problems with defensive driving? Or?
During my time here, I don't recall having a lot of problems with vehicle accidents. We had a few minor things. Dog bites were probably much more common than anything else.
Did you ever get bit?
Me? No. Did I get chased a time or two? Yes.
What does a postal carrier then or now do about that kind of thing? Was there training in dealing with that?
Well, there is a certain amount. The thing that the judgment I used, if I got out of my vehicle and there was a dog approaching me with his teeth showing, I got back in my vehicle, shut the door, moved on. I didn't deliver mail to that house, or if I needed to, the next house or two. until I was clear of that dog. The supervisor does send out a dog letter to that home. We also notify the animal control at the sheriff's department, so if that's somebody that's allowing a dog to run loose, that could be detrimental to not only the mail carriers, but children going to school or whatever, that they can pick them up or get that owner to fence them like they should be or whatever needs to be done.
What would a dog letter say, typically?
I basically say, and I don't remember word for word, but
sure,
basically would tell them that they needed to, if they wanted to continue mail service, they needed to either chain their dog up or put it in a fenced backyard or whatever so that the mailbox area was clear for the carrier to get to.
Did everybody cooperate with that?
For the most part. It's like everything else. You got about 5% of the public that no matter what you do, seems like they want to buck the system or feel that they have rights to, which, you know, that's their opinion. But still, if you're a supervisor or a postmaster, your main concern is that that carrier be able to do his job safely.
Right.
And that's part of it.
So what happens to that 5% of the population that doesn't cooperate on a dog?
Well, they could get a fine from the county. They could get their dog picked up. You know, that's kind of up to animal control.
Certainly
we can stop delivery of the mail till that dog is brought under control by whatever means.
Mm-hmm.
We have the right to do that. We are not going to send somebody to a house where they're deliberately allowing their dog to be out near the mailbox.
Right.
And that's our right and privilege, but generally if they want their mail, they'll soon do whatever they need to do to make sure the carrier can safely deliver to that house.
So the Postal Service has to cooperate with other entities if the
problem
continues.
Yeah. And then also they got the pressure of the neighbors on them if they're not
getting their mail. What other kinds of things can happen then?
Probably the most interesting or the most, interesting thing that happened to me was that I had a call one day when I was postmaster at the Grand, and this lady told me that something had been charged to her credit card, but she'd never received it. And so it was within a week or two, I had another call or two. So I called Postal Inspectors and visited with them. And we realized that there probably was a problem within the office. And we started doing some surveillance and found out that one of our city carriers was taking the credit cards out of the mail. And when the PIN number came along, taking that out of the mail and then using them to purchase items for themselves.
And yet the people still getting a bill?
Well, you would, because the credit card company has no idea who's who's using the card and purchasing the items until there's a complaint.
Uh-huh. What amount of time did that take to... without giving away, I guess, state secret, you know, you just have to lay in wait to watch that occur?
I would say that we probably, through surveillance, probably was able to catch that carrier actually doing something with the mail improperly in about 2 weeks. We already knew or had a real suspicion of who it was, mainly because of the kind of things that were purchased. Because we had, the inspectors can gather information just like any other law enforcement, and they went out to got all these records from the credit card purchases.
They
knew exactly what was bought and where it was bought. We took those dates of purchases, matched it with the employees' work schedules, and it was real obvious, real quick, who probably was doing it. But then we then through a little surveillance, they actually caught the person in the act and was able to arrest them. And then they then of course you go to federal court. And it's up to them what your
crime.
Oh yeah. Then it's up to them what your outcome is going to be.
Besides losing their job and
number one
and all of that.
Career.
Mm-hmm. And could be doing jail time.
Yes. Restitution and probation. There's a lot of things that, you know, when something like that happens, that they come about.
Right. So we see that theft can occur. Any other hazards of the mail carrier, the letter carrier that's out there that could be significant?
Well, the one typical thing you always worry about in retail is robberies. We had some break-ins to post office boxes and that kind of thing that I had to deal with over time. But nothing major.
Okay, so moving on then to the clerk, which you said you began doing both letter carrier and clerk. So what's the life of a clerk like then perhaps in the mail?
Then it's coming in early in the morning and sorting mail.
The clerks do the sorting.
Yeah, we sorted all the mail originally, flats, letters, sorted the parcels, and then got everything ready for the carriers. During the day, you have residual, like third class magazines, things like that to sort during the day. You open up your counter and then a certain amount of clerks are tied up at the window all day and released for lunch and, you know, things like that.
It sounds actually like a long day. Like there's a lot going on before the public ever.
Oh yeah, it starts pretty early. You got an outfit like Pendleton, they run 24 hours a day. But we close up. I believe it was like at 7 or 8 at night, your last truck would go out, and you'd have men during the day. That's another thing your clerks are doing there, keeping the outgoing mail sorted out. Now, nowadays, they just put it in bins and ship it out, so there isn't near the sorting or anything like that to do.
Okay, so... We talked about how it's pretty much automated in this day and age. How did it work in the 70s before they had the automation then, where everything now goes to Pendleton? Did we talk about that?
We sorted everything we could local, and we did sort a lot of the mail going out of town into areas.
That's right.
Some major cities had, say, their own pigeonhole. And Portland might have a couple, depending on their zip codes. Other areas of the country, they would have multiple zip codes sorted into one pigeonhole. Then as the mail goes through the system, it gets finer sorted until it gets to where it's going.
How did you progress from the clerk carrier into the postmaster position? Does that require testing as well? How do you get it?
I never did any testing per se, but after I'd been there a few years, I realized that I didn't want to be a clerk my whole life, that I wanted to do something different, more challenging. So I talked to the postmaster and I started doing things with the supervisor and opting for any extracurricular work or opportunities to learn things that I could. And he did give me quite a bit of opportunity on other things that I needed to learn. So it was kind of a self-program. There wasn't any set course you could do or anything. You just kind of had stuff, this is what I want to do, and do what you could. I did do, I take that back, I did do a few correspondence courses at home that helped me some.
From where were these courses from?
Well, from the Postal Training Center. They did have a training center. but it wasn't something that they were going to pay for you to go to, so you could get courses you could do at home. Yeah.
Let's talk more about that, the Postal Training Center. Did that cost money to do that? Was
no.
that part of the, was that something that you, that was available?
It was available to people who had the motivation to do them and wanted to advance.
What kind of coursework could come out of there? What are some of the courses that they might teach?
Okay, well, they had some writing courses. One of the major courses I took probably helped me as much as anything was called, I believe it was called AMPM course for postmasters or something like that. And it was basically geared towards how to run a small post office and everything you needed to know to do that.
Say, for example, like the Lockheed or Pilot Rock,
yes.
or maybe Moffett Hotel,
yeah.
Small town operations.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Are those operations typically run by one person or just a handful?
Mainly one person was the major person. You might have a part-time clerk who was actually a post office employee. You might have a non-career employee that you could hire part-time. Some offices have routes, some don't. Last year I had a real short rural, it was called a star route.
And we're continuing our history interview with Donald McGee. It's still January 11th, 2006. So, what does it mean to call something a star route? Is there particular significance?
Not really. A star route basically is a rural route that's contracted. It's not a regular post employee. Regular rural routes are post employees. They're basically the same kind of route, but just done by a non-career, somebody that contracts the route.
Okay. So we've talked about the correspondence coursework, then how long did it take you to become a postmaster?
As close as I can recall, I would guess about a year to a year and a half from the time I really started working at it, doing courses.
Before we move into that, you mentioned earlier about supervisor. Are there supervisors intermediate between letter carriers and clerks and postmasters?
In key post offices like LaGrand, Pendleton, Hermiston, Baker City, yes.
Did you ever fulfill any of those positions?
No. It's preferable. I would then. It would have been to my benefit to actually been in one of those positions for a while. But it didn't work out that way. Because generally, if you go from a clerk carrier into a supervisor position, you're going to go into a larger postmaster position right off. I started at pretty much the lowest there is.
So, do these small town postmasters don't often break into the big time?
It takes more and it takes longer. You can, it just depends on how flexible you are for moving, for one thing, and then also the opportunities, what offices become vacant, and what the rules are concerning moving. You know, are they going to pay for you to move from a clerk at this size of office, or is it in your commute area? There's a lot of things that tie into it. I think nowadays it's more restricted than it was when I became a postmaster.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you became a postmaster and you worked in several communities. Let's just list those.
Okay, Lostien, Oregon was my first. Mm-hmm. And while I was at Lostien, the postmaster at Enterprise Herald Lay retired. He asked me to go fill his position on a part-time basis till they filled the position. Turned out to be a year that I was what they call officer in charge or acting postmaster at Enterprise. And shortly after I was relieved from that position, I was appointed postmaster at Moffett, Oregon. And I was there 2 to 3 years when the postmaster Dufer passed away. And that was a little bigger office. It was closer to where I was spending a lot of time at the Dells. And it was closer to the Dells, so I asked for it in the office. So I moved to Dufer. And I was there probably about 3 years. And in that time, I got married and started having kids. Realized I needed a better income, so I put in for postmaster's students in Washington when I came over. And I got that job. And we moved over to State Wax, so they did not Bonneville, but I was postmaster's students for about 3.5 years. And John Day came over, so I put in for that. And got that job, and we took John Day, and I was there about 7.5 years. And one day my boss from Portland came by, and he said, "Have you ever thought about moving?" I said, "Yeah, I have." He said, "You know the postmaster of LaGrangeist?" I don't remember whether he quit or retired or what happened. He said, "Would you be interested?" And I said, "Yeah, I probably would." A few days later, he called me back and says, "I'm going to give you that job. So get ready to move to the Grand." And that's where I finished my career, where I started.
Okay. Did they give you help with moving each time you took each job?
Yeah, post office, that's one thing they do when you get promotions after you move. Mm-hmm.
I imagine it's not completely covered, but...
Never seems like anything's completely covered, but it helped a lot.
Okay. So you came back to LaGrange then, and you retired in this position as postmaster of LaGrange.
Right.
What are the duties of the postmaster here in LaGrange?
Well,
I know they would be the same everywhere, but...
The postmaster of LaGrange has a supervisor underneath you. So your supervisor basically deals directly with your clerks, your carriers, your road carriers, city carriers, custodian if you have one, your highway contracts, whatever you have. And then when it comes to hiring, labor relations, when your supervisor has something they're not sure how to deal with, you get involved. You're heavily involved with customer relations, customer complaints, things of that nature. While I was at LaGrange, I spent a lot of time dealing with the building, because it's a postal-owned building, so you're responsible for its care, its upkeep, remodeling if it needs it, dealing with your building people in Portland who were directly involved with buildings. And so I spent a lot of time with that. We did finish some major projects that needed to be done. We had a roof problem. I had to review the complete roof. So I was involved in contracting for that roof to be redone, and then monitoring the work and making sure it was done right. And then when it was done, the building people over me and myself, looked it over and signed off on it. We did quite a bit of work inside the building, painting, and we upgraded equipment during the time I was there. We went to what they call a POS system, where our point of sale is called computerized type window services. And I was also privileged to go around and do some training on different upgrades for equipment, things like that, Eastern Oregon, and doing different kind of audits and stuff. So what was it always in my office, we were sometimes out helping smaller offices or doing audits for them and different things.
So you owned your building. Is that not true in every community?
Most smaller communities, they have a lease building.
From the community or from the U.S. government?
No, from the community. Mm-hmm. I think that's partly because of community relations. Gets them a little more involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And they do want to be involved in the community as much as possible.
What sort of involvement did you have with your community as postmaster here? Were there community programs you participated in or your staff did that?
My community got involved some with the city of LaGrange and their tree planting program and things like this, and we did that at the post office. If you ever take a look, there's trees and plant trees on the side of it. And things like that. Some communities I've been involved in city council, and I've been involved in the Civil Air Patrol in LaGrange and John Day area, and doing public service for them in that respect. Also quite a bit involved in some areas with the Boy Scouts.
Were you involved with them here as well?
Not in the Grand, in John Day, yes, but we have been involved in Boy Scouts. I did a project in John Day with instituting the 911 system, and I was also a coordinator for the area when they were instituting the 911 system.
You mean when it first came into being?
Yes, in that area? Yes. I was on the city council of Mount Vernon, and then I became a coordinator for the area for the 911 system. And Civil Air Patrol and the Boy Scouts. So I didn't spend too much of time at home while I was there.
Right. Now, how many people worked for the post office here in LaGrange at the time that you were postmaster?
Yeah, I believe when I retired, we had approximately 32.
Do you recall, is that different, more or less than you had when you began the job?
That's more. The town has grown. When your town has growth, that means you build routes, and sometimes you have to add additional routes. I know there was definitely more rurals, because the outside of your town receives the bulk of the growth, so the rural routes probably do the most.
How do you, how do letter carriers become letter carriers today? Is it still a civil service exam?
Well, they're not civil service nowadays. They're a government employee, so they have to take what's called a postal test. When I was hired, it was a civil service job. Nowadays, it's a first job, federal employees, which comes in the federal employees retirement system. So they kind of got away with civil service in that respect.
Now, could we describe for our readers or others what the difference is, if we know it, between civil service and federal employees? Do we know?
I think the bulk of the change has been in how they do the retirement system. Because nowadays, under the federal employees retirement system, you have the option of 401k program. You have the option, you do have to pay into Social Security, which I never did during my postal career because I was civil service. And then they pay into a postal retirement. So they have a lot better options on long retirement. I don't think it affected much of the way you do your job. It didn't affect the way your health insurance and then your life insurance or anything like that. The bulk of the change is in the retirement part.
So people coming in today don't take a civil service exam. It's called a
postal test.
Is it the same test?
I do not know. I suspect that it's not, but I think it probably leans a lot in the direction it always has. But nowadays, so much of your work is done by machinery. You don't have to learn the things you had to learn when I started. So memory isn't as big a factor as it was then.
Now, is there a backup plan for a potentiality that all the equipment does break down and there's no way, other way to proceed? Could they easily go back to sorting without
I tend to say no.
Okay.
I don't think that anything's going to be down that long. And they have, I think, a certain amount of maintenance people that are responsible for maintaining and keeping this equipment going. I think the biggest problem might come with an electrical outage.
And that's sort of what I was thinking about myself.
And as you know, those don't generally last too long around here. We don't have tornadoes, hurricanes, things like some people deal with. So, you know, if our power is out an hour or more here, that's a pretty long time.
But not
might delay routes, but it's not going to keep them from being delivered by day.
So it's not a showstopper.
No.
Okay.
We have contingency plans for earthquakes, floods, anything that could happen. We have a contingency plan, so we know what to do if anything like that happens. And we are directly connected to whoever's over that above us, and then to, you know, with the government. So they have a lot of plans in case things do happen that they can take care of. I'm sure that came into play with like Hurricane Katrina. Because so much is wiped out down there, they didn't have post offices, they didn't have homes to deliver to. So you have to have a contingency plan because mail keeps coming every day from someplace.
Okay. So we're, it appears that your postmaster in the community is also the first point of, we've talked about investigating some of the smaller things that have taken place, the theft of the credit card and such. What are the postmaster's responsibilities for investigations of crime that might possibly take place? Postal crime, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Postmaster is directly responsible for anything like that, but you have a lot of resources.
And what would they do?
Well, for crime, you got the postal inspectors, and that's a big item right there. Anything to do with crime concerning mail is their job, and they're just the same as any law enforcement agency. They have the authority, just like any other police agency, to do whatever they need to do.
Where do the postal inspectors come from that serve this area?
For the most part, mine came out of Boise, Idaho. There is postal inspectors in Portland and other areas that can help or get involved if they need to. Sometimes I did get a postal inspector out of Portland, depending on what the problem was. But the bulk of my association with postal inspectors was from Boise.
What kind of problems can bring them into play?
Fraud, theft, mail being stolen out of mailboxes. Not damaged mailboxes so much because we're limited in what we can do. And also local police agencies have some responsibility too. Vandalism to postal vehicles, to postal buildings.
Any major
theft, like I said, theft is one. It can be internal, external. You could have counterfeit money floating around that they might feel they need to be involved in. It just depends.
Did you experience any major involvement meeting your postal inspectors during your time?
Not a lot. There were times when they'd call me and ask me about things,
right,
which a lot of times I had no clue what they were looking for or what was going on. And it's not like a need-to-know basis.
Right.
If they thought the local postmaster needed to be involved in something, you'd be involved and you'd know what's going on. If it was something that they might be looking at trends in the area for different things, trying to see where things were happening with the mail, they'd call me and ask me questions, but I'd never know really what was going on.
Mm-hmm. were you involved in any big investigations where you didn't know what was going on?
Just basically the one with the credit card asset. Most other things that they came in for, they did do audits. You know, we'd know about those the day they walked in the office. They open things up, we're going to audit you. So you'd open the vault and start counting. But for the most part, nothing major.
Did you know when they were coming to audit?
No.
Did they have routine audits, or they were always surprised?
It's like the lottery. Your number comes up, they don't call you. They walk in and say, we're here, we're auditing you. Or whatever.
Right. Where do the auditors come from?
Well, they'd be postal inspectors generally.
I see.
Could be Portland, could be Boise. We were part of the Portland district, but a lot of the times the postal spec we fell under was from Boise because they're closer. And they give them, just like anybody else, they give them areas that they're responsible for. But also sometimes different things they're responsible for. So if a certain thing happened, you might get postal inspectors from here. Another thing happened, you might get them from Portland. Just depends what's going on. What their expertise is, what they're actually responsible for.
What other things related to the post office maybe haven't we focused on or spent any time on that you'd like to share with us that maybe people out there would be interested in hearing?
Well, the thing that always fascinated me was the fact that so many people think that, you know, deliver mail is not a big deal. You just go in your vehicle, go out and distribute it around town. It is a time-consuming, knowledgeable job. You got to know what you're doing, and you got to be good at it to be a good mailman, as well as a clerk. It isn't a matter of just throwing your car and delivering. You have to put in delivery order. You have accountables you're accounted for, postage due, certified mail, registered mail, express mail. You got to have a knowledge of all these different things and a good knowledge of your route and where your dogs are at and things like that so you can do a good job of delivering these people's mail for them.
Did you find there were people who would come to the job not really able to perform because of that sort of thing?
There's a few that were challenging. Most people do a good job. But we had a few that, I had one fellow that worked for me from the East Coast, and he thought we were slave drivers compared to how they did their job back then.
What were the differences between there?
Apparently they got, in an 8-hour day, they had a lot less mail they had to deliver to have a full-time route. Here, what we call the full-time route, he thought was way too big.
So he didn't laugh? Or
he chose to go back.
Chose to go back. Mm-hmm. What else might people want to know about the postal service?
I can't think of a lot of things. I just don't know what we do without the postal service. You know, other companies could deliver, but I think if the post office wasn't there, that would cost us a whole lot more money to get our correspondence and things than it does now.
Does the post office provide services today that they didn't originally provide when you first got started?
I think probably your Priority Express mails are probably the things that I don't remember being there when I started.
Are those services fairly efficient for what they purport to do?
Yes, I think for the most part they do a really good job. But it's like, you know, any company can say, well, we'll send a letter from New York City to the Grand Organ overnight, but I don't know anybody that can really do that. So you have to be realistic. You know, when you say I'm getting an express mail or priority mail from someplace, you got to be realistic because we have no major airport in our backyard. Right. Like if we was in Portland, we got overnight, even sometimes same day service from certain cities because the airline schedules is not a big deal. When you live in remote areas of Eastern Oregon, like we do, you have to be realistic on your expectations of whatever kind of service you get.
Does any mail come by air to LeGrand?
No. Some express mail, I think, does come here in the Pendleton.
Because there's an airport.
Yes.
Can you explain to us what APO and FPO mean?
APO is mainly for land services, like the Army and so forth. Your FPOs are your fleet post offices, mainly for ships.
And so I had an APO address over in Germany when I was stationed there during Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically my unit name, APO, and a zip code. And I had a few friends who were the same way that were naval or marine that had FPO addresses. So can you explain how that gets to them? How they find how that mail ever gets to where
you mean if you're on a ship or whenever
on a land post, either APO or FPO?
Well, you have certain post offices are designated military overseas post offices. Your mail will go to those post offices from everywhere in the United States, and they will sort it how it's going to be routed. And I can't tell you the routes because I'm not familiar with any of them, but they're set up, they have a routing because it covers your whole world. Some goes to the West Coast, some goes to the East Coast, depending on, I assume, the zip code, just like everything else. And then those offices have to find or sort it for the route that's going to take to get to Japan or Hawaii or Europe, you know, depending on where in Europe or the Middle East or wherever. And then it's like everything else. The closer it gets out to where it's actually going, the finer it gets sorted until it actually gets to your base or whoever is delivering to you. When I was on a ship in the Med, all our mail went into Naples, Italy. And they sorted all the mail for our ship out and sent it out to us. Certain mail went into the naval facility at Naples, and some, I assume, went to other bases in
and
that area.
How would that mail get from Naples to your ship if you were out at sea? Would it fly it in?
Yes.
Every day?
Not necessarily every day, but what they'd have to do is they have to know where we were going to be ported next. And they'd send it to that port. And if we were close or had our helicopter in there, it would bring the mail back out the ship. And sometimes, a lot of times that did happen, we'd get it actually flown out the ship. Sometimes, if we were close to being ported, they'd leave it at the port and pick it up when they arrived. Carriers, aircraft carriers, they get the mail flown out to them on a fairly regular basis.
You know, as automated and as efficient as this sounds, even today, sometimes it would take me 3.5 weeks to get a letter that was sent today from my mother, and it turned out to be the same for my brother-in-law who just got back from Iraq, that we actually prefer to work on cell phones and internet if possible because it was so up to the minute. How come it takes the mail so long?
I don't know what the process is, the security that the mail goes through to get to where it's going.
But that would have something to do with it.
That, and I'd say that's probably the biggest thing.
Security,
probably.
Now, the post office doesn't take care of their internal security in the military then. They would use their own sensors or however they process their mail for security reasons, or is that a...
I'd say it's probably a combination, especially going overseas.
What kinds of... What are their...
But it depends on their routing, too, you know. Some places they may hold mail until they get a certain amount and ship it talking about war zones or hot zones or whatever you want to call them. You know, I'm sure that they handle things a little bit different there.
Anything new technological wise or whatever that was coming into play that really changed or amazing sorts of things to help with the operation as you were finishing up your career?
Well, I think the biggest thing that came into play in the end of my career was the machines that had the ability to sort your mail to the carrier, and then not only sort it to the carrier, but actually put that delivery order for the carrier.
In their park and loop order, did you say? Or
actual delivery order from the first house they delivered to the last house. So that the front of it was the first house, the end of that mail was the last house. They didn't have to sort it at all.
And they didn't have that before?
Absolutely not. You sort it in your case in delivery order. So first thing we had to do was sort it to the routes. So we just had to sort it out to get it to the routes. Then the route carrier had to take that mail and put it in the delivery order in his case.
And these machines can do both?
They do it both.
Did that have the effect of downsizing the operation?
I'm sure it, yes. I mean, anything like that's going to cut labor.
Now, is that used in this post office here in LeGrand or only over in Pendleton where the...
They have it here now, since I've retired it. Well, when I retired, they didn't have it yet. We had a certain amount of our mail that came in already sorted to the carrier, even magazines and things. But now, all their letter mail is sorted by the machines right here in the brand.
So when...
And that's letter mail.
Right. When it came from Pendleton with this new technology, it was already... was it already sorted to the route?
Some of it.
Okay.
They didn't have the ability to do it all, but they did a certain portion of our mail to the route. So we get in, we get a certain amount bundled to, say, City 1 or City 7. Same with magazines amongst your major companies that have big volumes actually sorted down to the route, even catalogs.
Okay, so LeGrand now has that ability. What about the smaller ones?
No, they're still going to be doing the deal with.
Okay.
Well, it has to be cost effective, number one. Most of the time when we got new technology or made changes, we wanted to pay back in a couple of years to 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it'd be the same thing with what they're doing now. You got to